Yofi, we're learning, we have been learning, and we're going to continue with Hashem's help, learning Masechet Sanhedrin. Where are we and what we're doing is a good question. So, what I thought we'd do is, we're gonna drop back a bit. We're going to do a classic Yirida Letzorech Aliyah. We're going to go back in order to go up. How far? If you open the book at Daf Bet, no. First page, no. We don't have to get that. You can if you want. But you were away for a while, and we carried on. So I think let's refresh over some of the stuff that we learned. Well, we tried to learn of Abraham's absence. Tov. So let's start with the Gemara, with the Mishnah on Kaf Gimel Amud Aleph.
That's 23A.
The Mishnah. Okay, so what did we say was happening in this Mishnah? So let's go through the words of the Mishnah. Dinei Mamonot B'Shosha. Laws of Mammon, money, monetary laws judged by three. How? Zebore lo echad, zebore lo echad. This one chooses one for himself, and this one chooses one for himself. Ushnehem, and both of them, borin lahem od echad. Both of them choose for themselves another one. So we saw a number of different opinions on what that means. Right, this one chooses one, and that one chooses one. So that's clear. So first of all, the litigants themselves choose each a judge. What happens next is subject to machloket. Either the litigants themselves are choosing the third one, or, good morning, or the judges themselves are choosing a third judge between them. We said if ultimately the machloket came down to even a more finer machloket, and they in fact both decided that the judges choose the third one and not the litigants. So what's the difference in the machloket between Rabbi Meir and Hachamim? So the difference was Rabbi Meir said that the litigants have to agree on the selection of the third judge. He's chosen by the judges, but he has to agree. Hachamim said no. The judges choose, and that's it. So that was the machloket in the first part of the Mishnah. Right? Shnehem borin lahem od echad. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's according to Rabbi Meir. Hachamim amrim shnei dayanim borin lahem od echad. No, the two judges choose for themselves the third one. Didn't we just say the two judges choose for themselves in Rabbi Meir's case as well? Yes. But the difference between Rabbi Meir is, although the two judges chose, in the case of Rabbi Meir, the litigants have to agree. And in the case of Hachamim, the litigants don't have to agree on the judge's choice as third person. Who?
Litigants.
On the third one, right? Have no choice. Okay, so that's the first part of the Mishnah. Next law of the Mishnah. Zeh posel dayan shel zeh, zeh posel dayan shel zeh. This one can disqualify that judge, and that one can disqualify this one's judge. Right? The two judges that were picked initially can be disqualified by the other litigant. Divrei Rabbi Meir, according to Rabbi Meir. Achamim amrim, Achamim said no. Ematai, when can you disqualify? Only in a specific case, which is when? Bizman she mevi aleihem raya, shehen krovim or pasulim. Only in the time when you bring proof that they are relatives or they're pasul. Avalim hayu kasherim, but if they were kosher, or munchim, or they were experts, mifuni beitim, certified by a beitim, eino yachol leposlan, you're not allowed to make them pasul. Right, that's Machloket okay, with Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir said, you're allowed to make them pasul in those circumstances. And Hachamim says, no, only if you can show that they are relatives or pasul. The Gemara explained more fully what the actual Machloket is. Anyone remember the actual Machloket there?
Whether litigant can disqualify
yeah,
the witness and the litigant can disqualify a judge.
No. That's what you that's the next law. That's disqualifying witnesses. We're talking now. What's the machloket between Rabbi Meir and Hachamim in terms of being of disqualifying a judge? What are they arguing about?
Rabbanim said that if anyone, they're all considered mukim. Once they're allowed, they're mukim.
Okay.
So you can't fulfill them.
Fair. Pretty much. I give you, if you're, this is a test, I give you 95.
The court of Syria. Namely, they're secular judges, and they're, quote, everyone relies upon them, but they have no Torah knowledge.
Okay, almost. That was the first attempt at solving the problem.
So they could be disqualified.
Yeah.
Because they're trusted by them,
I'm gonna clarify. You're both almost all there. So what we're saying is like this: Rabbi Meir and Hachamim both agree that expert judges can't disqualify. So when can Rabbi Meir disqualify a judge? Only if they're not really an expert. The Chachamim said if someone is if a judge is accepted by the population as being expert, even if they're not, you can't disqualify them. They've been accepted by the public as such, and they have the chazakah of being a mumkin. But Rabbi Meir says, no, they're not really experts. You're allowed to disqualify them. And that was the nub of the machloket between the two. Okay? Yeah, good. Top. Next, that was rule number two of the Mishnah. Rule number three: Zeh posel eidav shel zeh, v'zeh posel eidav shel zeh. This one can disqualify that one's litigant, that one's witnesses, and this one can disqualify the other one's witnesses. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says, Hachamim amrim einai tai. Hachamim say no. When can you do this? Only in a certain circumstances. When that bisman shemevi alehem raya, only when you bring upon them proof shehem krovim or pasulim, that they are relatives or pasul. Avalim hayu kasherim eino yachol pasulam. But if they were kosher, you cannot make them pasul. So, argument number three in our Mishnah regarding the disqualification of witnesses. Rabbi Meir says you can. Rabbi Hachamim say no, only if they are relatives. What is the case that Rabbi Meir and the Hachamim are arguing about?
Whether the witness and the litigant, and that's right, a witness and a litigant can testify that the father of one of the witnesses is a slave.
Witness and a litigant. Yes. So we had it. So first of all, let's say we had at least three explanations of this machloket. So first explanation, which we rejected, was Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish tried to explain it and said it's only in the case of a single witness. In the case of a single witness, you can disqualify him because he's only a single witness. You need two. Therefore, if someone tries to bring along a single witness into the case, then the other litigant can turn around and say, no, get out of here. But we rejected that in that. It doesn't work because the language of the Mishnah says Eidav in the plural. And Gemara showed that was Davka. It was specific that we said plural witnesses. We didn't say singular witnesses. Right? So Reish Lakish threw out. So then we had another alternative to explain the Mishnah, which was the one that Rabbi Yaakov just explained. yesterday now, which was, how can a witness disqualify, how can a litigant disqualify a witness? He's nogeh b'davar, he is connected to the case. A witness can't knock out, a litigant cannot knock out someone else's witnesses, because he's biased, he's part of the case. You need two separate witnesses to come and say that he's passive. So how can he be involved? Answer, if he's not going against the witness himself, but he's going against his father. He says, him and another witness come along and say, we know that your father was a slave. Then according to Rabbi Meir, he's allowed to make that testimony because it's not against the witness directly. So he's not Noged B'davar, he's not relevant to the case. They're going against his father. They're allowed to go against his father, even though ultimately we'll knock out the witness. Because if his father was a slave, then he'll too be a slave, and he can't be a witness if he's a slave. Chachamim say no. Even though you're going against the father, soft, you're really going against this witness. So we don't allow you to do that. So that's the machloket between Rabbi Meir and Chachamim, according to the first opinion. We saw two other opinions after that about what we're arguing about here. Opinion number two was, I'll give you a clue, two sets of witnesses. What happens in the case of two sets of witnesses?
And here say you can disqualify the first witness and consider the second.
Right. And how come him say?
No.
Why not?
Because because when the first witness is correct, you need not the second set.
Exactly. So very good woman. So the machloket in the second opinion is like this. If there's two sets of witnesses, that's the case we're talking about. If you have two sets of witnesses, according to Rabbi Meir, you always need to hear both sets. If you say you have two pieces of evidence, two sets of witnesses, you have to bring them both. But Chachamim say no. If you say you've got two sets of witnesses and you can prove your case on one set, that's fine, you don't need the second set. What's the consequence of that opinion? The consequence is as follows. Because Rabbi Meir is always going to have a second set of witnesses in those in this scenario, if you brought two sets, you have to hear the second one. So Rabbi Meir says the first set is not crucial to the case, and therefore the litigant can go against and try and knock out the first witnesses, because there's always a second set of witnesses, and therefore they're not nogeh b'davar, they're not relevant for the case, that they're crucial, because you've got another set of witnesses. So even if he does knock out the first set, it's irrelevant. There's another set of witnesses that are coming against him, so therefore we can rely on him, we can believe him, however you want to say the hashkafe is, the reasoning behind the law. But for whatever reason, we say that there's a second set of witnesses, so he's allowed to go against the first set. But Chachamim say no. Chachamim say, even if you've got two sets of witnesses, you don't have to bring the second set. It's personal discretion. If you want to bring the second set, you can. If you don't, you don't have to hear him. And therefore, because there might not be a second set, you're not allowed to go against the first set, because that could be the only set of witnesses that ultimately end up testifying. And because they allow the second set not to appear on the witness stand, they do not allow the first set to be disqualified by the litigant's testimony. But Rabbi Meir does, because he's got a second set coming along anyway. So he does allow the first set to be disqualified by the litigant, because he knows he's got a second set coming, and therefore those for sure, no one's allowing the litigant to argue against the second set, because they're the only set. There are three sets, so fine, could go against the first two. But as long as you've got one set of witnesses that the litigant's not allowed to challenge, that's okay. Both agree that's okay. Chachamim also agree with that as a law. But the only reason Chachamim don't allow it in practice is because they say that you don't have to have your second set. But if, for whatever reason, Chachamim required a second set, they would also agree with Rabbi Meir. So the machloket is only as a consequence of their argument elsewhere. So only as a consequence of the argument on whether or not you have to bring all sets of proof that you started the case with. The consequence of that argument filters down to here, that you would have a case, a scenario where a litigant could, according to Rabbi Meir, challenge the witnesses, but according to Hachamim, he's not allowed to challenge the witnesses. What's that case when you've got two sets? Okay, good.
After the first one,
is a good question. I think they asked that in the footnotes. Well, they asked that. Where did we ask that? I saw that in the text, in the page.
But you would need two sets of witnesses to puzzle the other witnesses.
Yeah, no, but what happens if you have got a second set of witnesses and Rebbe Meir allows the first set to be disqualified by the litigant? He says, it's okay, we've got a second set. And then the second set come along and they're disqualified by two separate external valid witnesses. So now it turns out that that first set were really the only set in the case. We saw that in here. It does say it in here. Let's have a look and see where.
Didn't we cover a case where a woman kept bringing
bad
witnesses?
Yeah, Makot. She has a hazaka or not, but she's alive. Rather, yeah, no, that was in the text. Right, the Gemara asked that question. Kaf Gimel Amud Bet, middle of the page. Gemara asks. No, hold on. Yeah. Ella, you see, where are we? On the middle of the page. Ella, in the thin lines, 1, 2, 3, 4 lines up from the end of the thin lines. Second word in, Ella. Ella, katechad. No, that's the wrong Ella. Sorry, Ella, two lines down. Two lines from the end of the word line. Ella nimset kat hashnia krovim of solids. What happens if the turns out that the second set are relatives or pasul? Mahu. What's the law then? Amalahen, he said to them, right, this is Rabbi Yochanan replying and says, Kva he'idu Eidim Harishonim. Right? The first one's already testified. And therefore, what's done is done. Right? So according the Ika Damre, I'll explain in a minute, and there were, alternatively, there were those who say, Amar Wab Ashi, Kva Eidu Eidim Harishonim. Same thing, but just a different response. A different who said it, whether it's Rabbi Yochanan said it, Rabbi Ashi said it. That's the Ika de Enwa. But the what do they say? Kva he'edu harishonim. They already testified. Meaning, we allowed the litigant, Rabbi Meir's case, Rabbi Meir allowed the litigant to disqualify the first set of witnesses. No, in the normal case, the first set of witnesses came, and he allowed them to be disqualified, and he brought the second set, and the second set was disqualified. Right? So what's the answer? The answer is the first one already testified, it's done. Meaning there's no witnesses now in the case. we allowed it. Since we allowed it, we don't undo it and say, actually, let's just forget the fact that we disqualified you and bring you back, because you're the only real set of witnesses we have now. No. Because we allowed it, it stands. In the case of Rabbi Meir.
So they were disqualified before they actually gave testimony?
I don't think it matters. I think they're disqualified at the point in the case where proof is brought against them that they're passive. It could be before they stole. It could be that they testify. I can understand without speaking. And at that point, the witness or one of someone scratches their head, wait a minute. I know you. He's already testified. Right. That's fine. You can go back and you can possibly.
Kavayidu.
Yeah. Meaning that they already testified.
They already testified.
Harishonim. We depend on the first witnesses. Here, the first ones really means, but who's the first testimony? The first testimony in this case means the litigant. He's the one that's testifying against these false witnesses, against these passive witnesses. So the first testimony really means his testimony. He's the first testimony. They haven't yet really testified. There's no reason for them to have testified.
He's trying to disqualify them by testifying
against them, right.
Adim,
how we should.
The first
witnesses. Okay, so there's a Rashi here. About 8-10 lines down in the Rashi, towards the end of the line. Kavahidu Rishonim. Kat Rishonah, the first set. What does that mean? Kashir Nimset Kat Shniyah Psula. When the second set is found to be Pasul. Kavahit Kala Bakashirut Edotan Shel Elu. Already the the eligibility of the testimony of the first set has been wrecked. Amaidin al Pasulan al Hapasul. The ones that testified against the Pasul. Right? The Pasul here was the witnesses, so the ones that testified against the Pasul. And at that point, he still wasn't Nogeh Be'edut, because at that point, there was still a second set of witnesses that were yet to come. They were found later to be Pasul, but at the point they testified, he was Adayin Lo Hayah Nogeh Be'edut. He wasn't connected to the Edut. And since that they were the Kablah Behekshe, they accepted him as being kosher originally when he did testify. Ne'amanim lepasolet harishonim, he's believed in order to pasol, disqualify the first ones, the first set of witnesses. Lamed Aleph, Lashon Acher, alternatively, Kavai Duaidim harishonim. Already the first witnesses have testified. Kat Rishonah, Sheidu Beidotan Shel Balei Dinim, that testified in the testimony of the litigants. Umihi Hemni, the Kevan, the Shnia Psula, since it turned out that the second one was Pasul. To Lo Mifasle, we don't further disqualify Kamai that which came before. The Hani Milei Nogeh Be'edut Vashon Rishon Nireh Hidakit Nakat Vahai Lishna Kavahe Idu. Sean. Why she said that the end, the first version seems the better. You could say that right, so you can either, you can, like she said, you could read it both ways. You could say that that they already testified means that you do keep the original testimony and you don't pass all the first set. But he said he doesn't like that. He prefers the first one, which is that you do allow the first disqualification to stand. And that's what it means that the kavah ha'idu harishonim. First testimony. Okay. Tov. Next thing we looked at was, we said, is this dispute between Rabbi Meir and Chachamim, according to this version, which is based on whether or not we hear the second set of witnesses, right? That's the machloket here. Whether or not, if you've got two sets of witnesses, you have to hear the second set. So the Gemara said, is that argument the same argument that we find elsewhere between Rebbe and Rashbag, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel? Right? Rebbe and Rashbag, they argued on something similar. And is it the same argument the Gemara wants to know? What was Rebbe and Rashbag arguing about? They were arguing about the case of a chazakah and a deed. Right? What do we say the scenario was? Someone comes into court and claims that he owns a piece of land. And he claims that he has two proofs, two types of proof. He's got a chazakah and he's got a deed. So the deed is a shtar. For example, a deed of sale. I bought it. And here's my deed of sale. This is my land. His chazakah is that he's been there 3 years without anybody challenging him or arguing against him. And in the absence of a shtar, that would have been enough. He could have gone to court with his chazakah. Someone came to challenge him and walked into court and said, this is my land you're sitting on. I've been away on holiday for the last 4 years. But this is mine. He comes to court and says, no, it's not. I'm like, what's your proof that it's not? Well, I've been here for 3 years and nobody's argued about it. I've got a chazakah. So he would win in the absence of any other proof to the contrary. So he would win. The chazakah is good enough. So what happens in the case of a person who has both proofs? He has a deed and he has a chazakah. He's been there for more than 3 years and nobody's argued. But he also has a deed. And he walks into court and he says, I've got these two proofs. This guy's trying to throw me off my land. I've got two proofs, a deed and a chazakah. So, Rebbe and Rashbag argue. Let's see who said who. Divrei Rebbe. Right. Rebbe says, if you've got a deed, you have to produce it. But Rashbag says, no, you can rely on the chazakah. Brighter, Rebbe Rashbag, if this is a scenario, Rebbe says, if you said you had a deed, you have to produce it. Right? So let's say you arrived at court. Why wouldn't he produce a deed? A deed is wonderful proof. He doesn't want to produce a deed, so maybe he didn't have it on him. He left it at home, whatever reason. He didn't have it with him, but he said, trust me, I've got the chazakah. Let's go with the chazakah. It's good enough. I'm going to win it on the chazakah. So Rebbe says, no. If you said at the beginning of the case that you had a deed and a chazakah, you've got to bring both. And Rashbag says, no, if you haven't got your... So rely on the chazakah. If the chazakah is good enough evidence, that's also good. So Gemara says, maybe this is the same argument. Maybe this is the same argument as Rebbe Meir and Chachamim. That if you've got two pieces of evidence, and you say that you've got two pieces to start with, you've got to bring them both. You can't rely on just one of them and say, you know what, forget the other one. Right? Maybe it's the same argument here. Gemara says, no. In this case, it's not the same. What's the difference?
Shtar and chazakah is really the same. When you have a shtar,
yeah.
Or let's say you have to shtar, you have to chazakah. Connected.
Okay, yes, there.
Witness day is separate. It's yes. Like different. It's different. Like a star is a. Let's say you have to start, the Hasaka is nothing.
Okay.
So, the one witness you have already. But the star is nothing when you have the Hasaka.
Right, okay. So, so the explanation given is that the power of the chazaka only comes from the shtar, meaning that you can't claim to have as a chazaka if you don't claim you had a shtar. The reason why you claim your chazaka is because you lost the shtar, but you're not claiming on the basis of the chazaka itself. Chazaka itself is meaningless. You can't say I've been here 3 years; it must be mine.
No.
You can only claim, I've been here 3 years, and I had a shtar, but I just don't have it. I've lost it. Disappeared. It got burned in the fire. I don't know where it is. But I had one. My chazaka backs up the fact that I claim I had a shtar. They're connected. They're linked. The two pieces of evidence. But the two sets of witnesses are two completely, they're not related to each other at all. You can have one, say you can have another. And you can rely on one set just by itself, but you can't rely on a chazaka in the absence of a claim that you actually had a shtar. So if you say that you have a shtar and that you have a chazaka, so then you need to bring the shtar because that's what your chazaka is based on. It's not a freestanding claim in the absence of a shtar. So therefore we say no. It's not the same machloket. Tov. So I think let's go from there. We are now on the bottom of Kaf Gimel Amud Bet. Right, so now what we're going to do is, this is now a third way of explaining the Mishnah. We're going to go back into the Mishnah and say, no, this is different. So we saw two different ways of explaining the Mishnah. One about your father was a slave, and the second one just we looked at now. Two sets of witnesses. Now, a third way of looking at the Mishnah, right? Machloket between Rabbi Meir and Hachamim. Are you allowed to disqualify witnesses or not? What circumstances are they arguing about? So now we're going to say that actually we're going to bring them both together. That the clauses about the witnesses and the judges are actually together. We're going to see as follows. Kiata Rabin Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Right? The last line of the page, middle of the line, Kiata Rabin. When Rabin came, right, when he came to Bavel from Eretz Yisrael, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, he said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Huh?
Shahir.
Which?
Shahir, not
there. Shot. Rabin. Oh. Tom. Contemporary political joke. Rabin. Right. Yochi.
I thought he was. I'm not going to get into it.
He was murdered by the green aliens dressed up as the CIA.
No, they want to touch him.
Kiata Rabin Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Right? So Rabbi Yochanan has a different explanation for this Mishnah. Right? Reisha, he says the first part, Be'edim Pasulim, Be'dayanim Kesherim. The first part is talking about where the Edim are Pasul, and the Dayanim and the judges are kosher. Right, we said that actually what we've got here, we've got a Mishnah that the rules two, we said there's three rules in the Mishnah, but actually rules two and three are linked according to this explanation. We said there's three different rules here. Rule number one, how you pick judges. This one picks one, they pick two between them. Rule number two, how do you disqualify a judge? Depends if he's an expert or not. Rule number three, how do you disqualify a witness? Top different opinions. Three different rules of Mishnah. Now we're saying no. We're saying two and three are linked. Two and three, how do you disqualify judges and how do you disqualify witnesses? They're linked in their scenarios. What's the case? So there's two different scenarios that these two laws apply to. Like this. Rule number one, three three laws of the Mishnah. Rule number one, picking judges. Right? Fine, we dealt with that, no one dealt with it. Very happy. Rule number two and three, we dealt with separately before, but now we're going to join them together. So rule number two dealt with, apparently anyway, disqualifying witnesses. And rule number three dealt with disqualifying, no, the other way around, disqualifying judges. And rule number three dealt with disqualifying witnesses. And now we're saying these two are linked. And there's two different scenarios being played out here in the Mishnah. So we'll say it outside and we'll see that inside. So outside, what's going on? So there's two scenarios. Scenario one is where the witnesses are pasul, and the judges are kosher. And scenario number two is the opposite, the reverse, the witnesses kosher, and the judges are pasul. We have to understand what that means. Exactly, but they're the two scenarios that we're now dealing with.
Why isn't there a third one?
Why isn't there a third one, which is?
Namely, both for pasul.
So then there's no argument. We're only talking, here we're only talking about an argument between Rabbi Meir and Chachamim. Right, Rabbi Meir and Chachamim have a machloket in our Mishnah. We're trying to work out what is this machloket over here between the two of them. So we're trying to find the scenario that fits this machloket. So now we're coming up with a different scenario that would fit a machloket between them. If they were both kosher, they were both pasul, everybody would agree, and we wouldn't have an argument. But only in the case of where one of them is pasul and one is kosher, or the one is kosher and one is pasul, we actually have a machloket between Rabbi Meir and Chachamim, which gives us rules 2 and 3 in the Mishnah, or sections 2 and 3, the Resha and the Sefer. And we're now going to call this part the Resha, and this is the Sefer. Meaning they're actually part of the same thing, but they're just a ratio and safer of the same scenario. This is the first scenario and the second scenario. And Rabbi Meir and Chachamim disagree in this situation.
Well, didn't we cover this before when it comes to picking judges, that if the third judge says that one of them is disqualified, or he doesn't want to be on there, he can not be on there. He can decline.
So say
that. Anyway, one litigant picked the judge, another litigant picked another judge.
Yeah.
And they both pick a third judge.
Yeah.
The third judge realizes that one of them is not qualified.
Realizes one of who?
One of the judges is not qualified. So he can decline.
Okay, so therefore, so what you're telling me, how's that relate to?
Anyway, we've already covered this.
No, that is dealing with judges. Like picking the judges. No, the first rule doesn't deal with disqualifying judges, it only deals with picking the judges. How do you choose the panel of three? So that was the first rule, how you dealt with the panel of three. Disqualifying them is now in the rules two and three. We don't come to disqualifying until now. The first rule didn't deal with disqualifying.
Right, but what I'm saying is, for the third judge,
you don't know. Until you get to this part of the Mishnah, you have no idea how you can disqualify them. The first rule of the Mishnah only told us how you choose them. And if we stop there, we'd have no idea how to disqualify them. We now have to choose them.
Right, but wouldn't the two judges...
You could logically assume different things, but you wouldn't know. Because we haven't got any laws about disqualification. We've only been given the law about choosing at the beginning. Now we're in the laws of disqualification. It's in stage two and three. So, what's the difference? Top. right? So we said it's like this. This one is a little bit harder to understand because the situation is not clear. Meaning the actual situation of the testimony here is not so clear. It turns out like this. The litigant, in both of these cases, case 2 and 3, we have a litigant trying to disqualify. In the first case, the ratio, we're going to call it, the litigant is trying to disqualify the judges. And in the second case, this same litigant is trying to disqualify the witnesses. So what's the case here? So we're saying like this. This is a scenario Rabbi Yochanan explains, where the litigant goes against both. He tries to knock out the judges and he tries to knock out the witnesses. It turns out he has, in the first scenario, it turns out he has proof against the witnesses. The witnesses are indeed passive. But the judge, he doesn't have proof. The judge is kosher. And in the second scenario, the reverse, turns out that the witnesses were actually kosher, or he doesn't have evidence enough to go against them. But the judges, he does have. So what's the difference? So let's read it in the Gemara, and then we'll explain. Gemara says like this. Okay, top of the page of Kaf Daled Amud Aleph. Be'edim pasulim v'dayanim kasherim. Where the witnesses are pasul, found to be pasul, the dayanim kasherim, but the judges were actually found to be eligible, meaning, according to the commentary, meaning that he didn't have enough evidence against them. Migo, de pasle edim, pasle nami dayanim. We have a migo, right? That since we've passed the edim, since we were successful in arguing that the edim, the witnesses, were passed, the judge is also passed. Meaning, we believe the litigant, the witnesses, that he's also passive. But in the Sefer, we'll come back and explain, but in the Sefer, the Dayanim Pasulim, the Edim Kashim, in the Sefer where we got the reverse, where the judges are found to be passive and the Edim, the witnesses, are found to be kosher, or at least that we didn't have proof against them. The Migo de Pasle Dayanim Pasle Edim. Since we were able to disqualify the judges, we should also be able to disqualify the witnesses. Right, so this is the explanation. This is all going according to Rabbi Meir, but Hachamim would disagree. Okay, I can read you the article explanation, but let's see the Rashi. The Eidim Pasul and the Dayanim Kasherim, right, where the witness is a Pasul and the Dayan, the judges, is held to be kosher. Baldin Posel HaDayanim. The Baldin, the litigant, Posel HaDayanim. He disqualifies the judges. Va'edim Nimsa'u Devarav Emet. But the witnesses, their words remain found to be true. Al ha'edim, devarav emet, al ha'edim, umishum hachi, and because of this, mehimeinam le afilu legabe dayanim. It helps them even for the judges. Ha'edim nimsa'u devarav emet, al ha'edim. Ah, sorry, I read that wrong. The litigant, let's start again. Baldin posel ha'dayanim. So the litigant disqualifies the judges. Va'edim namsu dvarav emet al ha'edim. And the witnesses, meaning the litigant, the nimsa'u dvarav emet al ha'edim. Their words are found to be true against the edim, Nope. Tom, let's read the footnote in the article. Number one. It says like this. Ordinarily, the litigant's testimony to disqualify the judges or witnesses would not be believed. Nevertheless, if he testifies simultaneously against both the judges and the witnesses, and his testimony is corroborated against one of them, Rabbi Meir rules that he's believed concerning the other as well. Now, Chachamim dispute this reasoning and rule that even under these circumstances, the litigant is not believed. So what's he saying? So he's saying outside, the fact that he's believed against one, he's believed against the other, even though he can't prove it. Now, the difficulty is this, that we have no clue what's going on here, why he should be believed against the other set.
So is he talking about just the litigant and a single witness?
Yes.
So you're talking about...
Yes.
Okay. So it goes back to the idea of disqualifying a witness because his father is a slave.
No. It goes back to disqualifying a witness because he's pastor or karov. There's a reason to disqualify him. A reason to disqualify the judge is a good, valid reason. But in any case, you need to have two valid witnesses. Hachamim say you need two valid witnesses that don't include the litigant. So they disagree with Rabbi Meir. But Rabbi Meir says, no, the litigant, which is what the Talmud Flocket is, the litigant is allowed to be part of the disqualification testimony. Why? We're talking about a case where he's believed against one, because once one set of testimony, you went against both. One set of testimony was found to be correct. The other one, turns out we believed him anyway, presumably because there was an absence of evidence. Otherwise we wouldn't need to believe him. But apparently we believe him since he was believed.
When the judge is kosher, they believe him. But when the witness is kosher, they cannot believe him.
No, he's said in both cases. In both cases, Rabbi Meir says we believe him. Whether the witnesses were kosher and the judges were pasul, or the other way around, the judges were kosher. Either way. So that's what he's saying. They're not. The circumstances. The scenario is we don't know.
He's called the judge. The judge only when the witnesses is the most important thing.
The thing is, we don't know if they're kosher or not. The litigant came along and said, both the judges and the litigant in this, and the witnesses in this case, are pasul. They're liars, they're relatives, they're family, they're whatever. He made a claim against both. Because he was able to prove the claim against one of them, we believe him on the other, even though he didn't have the proof for it.
Yeah,
that's the bigger. Yeah, but it doesn't make a difference here. He doesn't make a difference to say in one case it's allowed and one case it doesn't. He says in both cases. In both cases, because you accepted one, or one was found to be true, then we accept automatically the other set of testimony, even if we can't prove it. Now, Gemara is going to say there's a difference. Right? Rava now says, but wait a minute, I agree with you in the case of right, so let's see which case. Matkif la Rava. Rava says like this. Rava says, Bishloma Migo de Pasle Adim Pasle Nami Daini. It's understandable that when you will have a Migo, that once you've made the witnesses pasul, you can pass on also the judges, right? But if you successfully go against the witnesses, it's understandable that I believe you against the judges too. Ika beidina achrina. Why? Because there's always other courts, other judges. Right? If I believe you against the witnesses, then it's understandable that I let you. I also agree that the judges, you're probably right too. You made a claim against them, you didn't have 100% evidence, but fine, I'm going to agree and I'm going to believe you that they're also false. Why? Because it doesn't matter so much. Fine, we'll just bring in another set of judges. Right? So I allow your migo to stand. You are believed on one set, you are believed on the other. Ela migo de pasli dani pasli nami edim. But the other way around, Rava argue, doesn't work. Amigo, that you, since you've made the judges passel, you could also passel the edim. Ha edim tu leka. Can you say that there are any other witnesses? No. You can't just go and find other witnesses. So just because you were successful in making the judges passel, doesn't follow that we also accept your testimony must be true also against the witnesses. So therefore, the Gemara answers like this. Lo, no. Actually, tzricha de'ika kat acheret. We're talking about where there is a second set of witnesses. Right? Where even, so this law does stand, you can go, you can believe the litigant when he managed to disqualify the judges, and now he wants to disqualify the witness based on amigo. We allow him to. Why? Because there's another set of witnesses coming anyway. Because we follow Rabbi Meir's. We follow Rabbi Meir's opinion, which is that if you've got a second set, you have to bring them. This is according to Rabbi Meir, and this is the Machoket. But he allowed that in the first place, in the original case where Rabbi Meir allowed you to disqualify the first set of witnesses. Yeah. Because you had a second set, and nobody said, yeah, but the second set might be not good. We allowed it, and we said, even if it turns out the second set are no good later, the first testimony still stands. So here too, we're also talking about the case where there's a second set of witnesses. Ha'le kikat acheret might, but if there was a case where there was no set of second witnesses, what would be the case? Hachinami de lo matzei pasle. Then it would turn out that we can't disqualify the first set. Right? That we can't, if there's no second set, then you can't disqualify the first set. Haina de Rav Dimi. And then we're back to Rav Dimi's answer. Right? That was our first set. That was our first machloket between Rabbi Meir and Hachamim. Depends on one set or two sets. Then we're talking about the same case. So the Gemara answers no. That's not what we're talking about here. There is a different reason. Ika benehu. This is what between them. There is a difference in the migo. The masava amwinan migo, or masava lom amrima migo. One holds that we go by migo, and one holds that we don't go by migo. So we actually, I'll explain in a minute. This third explanation of our Mishnah is a valid explanation of the Mishnah. It is the case of where we believe him in one set, we believe him against the other. He claimed against both the witnesses and the judges. If we accepted one of the testimonies, we go with the other, we say the other one is acceptable too. He was probably right, we're going to disqualify them. What's the case? It's the case when there is another second set. If you've got another second set of witnesses in the background waiting, so fine, you can get rid of the first set. We believe him on the judges, we're also going to believe him on the witnesses. Why? Because there's another set of witnesses. And it's only where there's a second set. But wait a minute, the Gemara says, if you go with this reasoning of the second set, isn't this the case of Rav Dimi that we looked at earlier, where Rav Dimi said the whole argument between them was where you have one set and two sets? So no. What's the difference here? The difference is this is based on Migo, and this is not based on Migo. There's no Migo in Rav Dimi's case. Rav Dimi's case was purely if there's one set of witnesses or another. If you've got one set, you can go again. If you've got two sets, you can go against one according to Rabbi Meir, not against that one. Why? Just because you've got another set. But according to this third explanation, it's only based on the fact you've got a Migo. If you didn't have a Migo involved, this wouldn't work. You're not allowed to disqualify them just because there's a second set. It's based on the fact that there's a migo. And that's the difference. The difference between Rav Dimi and Rabbi Yochanan, this was Rabbi Yochanan when Rabin came from Babel, and he said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. So the difference between Rav Dimi and Rabbi Yochanan, why they have two different explanations for our Mishnah, is because Rabbi Yochanan holds by migo, and Rav Dimi does not hold by migo. And therefore, that ends clean air, the three explanations of our mission. Which is pretty tough the first day back. Which will go downhill from here.